Good morning. For the capital campaign, we now have responses from 59 of our 100-plus pledged units, and the latest pledged amount is $359,000, or 48% of our total goal. This is the most significant financial undertaking our church has taken in over 10 years, and we are hoping for 100% participation of members. If you haven't yet made your pledge, please do so as soon as possible. Thank you for your generosity. We are delighted to have the Reverend Dr. Tony Larson back in the pulpit today. You may have been expecting to hear about Goldilocks and the Mama Bear, but we're going to have to wait until Mother's Day for that sermon. Today, Tony's sermon is titled, Angels Who Have Forgotten. Reverend Tony is recently retired after serving as pastor of the Olympia Brown UU congregation in Racine for 42 years. We welcome Tony's husband, Craig Mathis, as well. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming LCUUC activities and events, and everyone is welcome to attend. LCUUC is a UUA-affirmed welcoming congregation, and we are open to all people, regardless of whom they love or how they present gender. Come and explore what community can mean to you. Please take a moment at this point to silence all electronics that you may have here with you today as we begin our service. Thank you. Thank you so much, Andy. At times, our own light goes out and is rekindled by a spark from another person. Each of us has cause to think with deep gratitude for those who have lit the flames within us. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our opening hymn, number 95, in the gray hymnal, There Is More Love Somewhere. Thank you.
The Islamic mystic Maulvi Rumi said, "Tell me, gentle traveler, you who have wandered the whole world and seen the sweetest roses bloom and the brightest rivers flow, of all that your eyes have seen, which is the fairest land?"
"Shall I tell you where nature is most blessed and fair? It is where those we love abide. Through the space that be small, it is ample above kingdoms. Though it be a desert, the river of paradise runs through it, and in it are the enchanted woodlands."
And the Hindu Upanishads tell us, "You could have a golden treasure buried beneath your feet and walk over it again and again, but never find it because you don't realize it's there. Just so, all beings live every moment in the city of the divine, but they never find that because it is hidden by the veil of illusion."
The Roman Stoic Marcus Aurelius said, "Speak the truth freely and without disguise, and do things according to the worth of each. Let no one's wickedness hinder you, nor people's opinions or words. And whatever the time may be, when you shall be near to your departure, respect only your ruling faculty and the divinity within you. Then you will be a person worthy of the universe that has produced you, and you will cease to be a stranger in your native land."
Would you take a moment to greet the divine beings all around you with a gesture of friendship? You didn't hear it? Yeah. Well, we did turn it a little bit lower than just so I didn't hear it echoing. Oh, well, let them know.
Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. My name is Carol Whiteman, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. In this month's Touchstones, the Day 25 readings from the Common Bull is from William E. Gladstone and seems fitting for the times we find ourselves in. We look forward to the time when the power of love will replace the love of power. Then will our world know the blessings of peace. Whether you are here with us for the day or here for a lifetime, we are glad that you have chosen to join us for worship, community, and celebration.
Broken down the wall. Love has broken down the wall. Let us join our hearts as one. Love has broken down the wall.
Love has broken down the wall.
Love.
We do our best to help our children learn to give generously and with an open heart. And one of the ways we do this is by collecting non-perishable food items each week for the local food pantries. If you have food items to share, please bring them forward at this point in the service, or better yet, ask a child to bring them forward for you. I invite the children to come up front, and Reverend Tony will tell us a story.
My name's Tony. Do you know how old I am? What would you guess? Really old? I know, but how many years? I'm 68 years old. Are any of you that old? No? Okay. Well, when I was born, that would be back in 1949, so it was a long time ago, the United States had been in a war called World War II. And after the war, there were a lot of soldiers coming back home, and a lot of times they would still be wearing their uniforms and they would hitchhike, which is not a safe thing to do nowadays. But at that time, a lot of people would pick up someone that they saw was hitchhiking. One of those soldiers came home to a family reunion, but he found out that his mother had kidney problems and she needed a blood transfusion or she wouldn't make it through the night. Can you imagine? You come home from the war, you want to see your family, you're so happy to see them, and you find out that your mother is dying. Her blood type was AB negative, which was very hard to get in those days. Nowadays we have all kinds of blood banks and things, and you can get all different kinds, but it was rare in those days to get it, and there weren't any blood banks or air flights to ship it, and no one in the family had that blood type, so it looked like she was going to die, he felt bad about it. So her son left the hospital to gather up the family members to say goodbye, and as he was driving down the highway, he saw another soldier hitching a ride. And he almost passed him up, but he thought, well, he's a soldier, just like I was. I'll give him a ride. So he let him in, and that soldier noticed that the guy driving the car was crying. He was crying about his mother because she was dying. And for the rest, I think I'll have to read you what his daughter wrote about it. So here's her version of this story. She said, "My father left the hospital in tears to gather up all the family members so everyone would get a chance to tell grandmother goodbye. As my father was driving down the highway, he passed a soldier in uniform hitchhiking home to his family. Deep in grief, my father had no inclination at that moment to do a good deed, yet he pulled to a stop and waited as the stranger climbed into the car. My father was too upset to even ask the soldier his name, but the soldier noticed my father's tears right away, and he asked about them. And through his tears, my father told this total stranger that his mother was lying in a hospital dying because the doctors had been unable to find her blood type, which was AB negative. And if they didn't locate her blood type before nightfall, she would surely die. It got very quiet in the car, and then this unidentified soldier extended his hand out to my father, palm up, and resting in the palm of his hand were the dog tags from around his neck. And the blood type on the tags was AB negative. And the soldier said to my father, turn the car around and get me to the hospital. And then she says, my father's mother, my grandmother, lived until 1996, 47 years later. And to this day, no one in our family knows that soldier's name. But my father has often wondered, was he a soldier or an angel in uniform? a thought to remember as you go forth today, and we sing you down.
Hi. May the light and love of our chalice lead you today and every day. Thank you, got it? Please help in singing the children to their classrooms. The song is called "For You Shall Go Out," and the words are written in the order of service. At this time in our service, when we celebrate generosity, at this time we are asking members of the church community to dig deeper to provide much-needed TLC to our church home, this building. Rick Sternkopf has a few words for us.
Stewardship. And if you don't pledge, this is what happens. And this is really a neat group, that being involved in stewardship in this group, I can honestly say it's been a privilege, it's been enjoyable, it's been wonderful, mainly because I got to meet so many of you in a small group that I might not have known, just because we have this unique and different way of doing stewardship. So again, I want to take this opportunity just to thank you for that. What we did try to do with stewardship when we redid it 3 years ago is really not twist arms, all kidding aside. We wanted to just inform people of what the needs were of this church. I think a lot of us, and I'm certainly one, we come on Sunday mornings and just assume this is all just here. It takes tons of work, effort, time, and money to make this all happen. So what we tried to do with the stewardship thing for the last 3 years is be aware of what it takes just to turn the lights on, and probably more importantly, to have the staff. We don't always see them because they're behind the scenes sometimes. And there's Reverend Amy, who's up here frequently or often. And we do get to see that. But a lot happens that just to keep the place going, in addition to all the volunteer stuff. So that's stewardship. And thank you, it's been working. But now we have a capital campaign, and I think it's a little bit different, that we need to fix this building. And what occurred to me in thinking about this when Gail asked me to do this, that there's some really special people in this building that here today that founded the church 20-some years ago and probably just as importantly a dozen years ago bought this building. And they really have a vested interest in this building. And my guess is that when they come in every Sunday morning or Wednesday nights or whenever they show up here, they walk in and say, yeah, I'm part of this church. Well, guess what? Those of us that joined the church in the last 12 years, after they bought it, we have an opportunity to do the same thing. So my thinking is that a year from now, when a lot of this restoration and the church looks different and brighter and welcoming, that when we drive in, we're going to see a bright, beautiful building, and we'll be part of it. This is our opportunity to be part of it. Thank you.
It used to be that folks coming to church used the offering plate to fulfill their pledges of financial support. Nowadays, most of us click on the church website or set up automatic transfers from our checking accounts. Some still write a monthly check, paying their church bill along with all others. But passing the offering plate was never just a practical exercise. It has always been a ritual. Even if your pledge is paid up, it is worthwhile for you to bring just even a dollar to drop into the plate as a ritual reminder of the form of love that we call generosity. Let it be a reminder that we must nourish our capacity to give, the practice of giving, until it is second nature and first response. helps bring forth the realm of love. The offering will now be given and gratefully received. These gifts given and received for the work of this community. As a community of human hands and human hearts, this is the time in our service where we come together to bear witness to one another's lives. Before the service, you are always welcome to silently light a candle on the candle table, but now we speak aloud, and Reverend Tony will light candles for us. If you'd like to share a joy or need to have us be with you in holding a concern, please raise your hand and the ushers will bring you a microphone.
This is Jim. If you would light a candle of concern for Amy and Brian Shaw, who are struggling through the flu that's going around this year, and a candle of joy, because I'm still smiling, to see Kaz back in our fold once again.
This is Megan. Please light a candle in memory of Linda Utter, who passed last week. The relationship is complicated, but she became a grandmother to my nephew and a second mother to my brother after his wife died, and is very important to us.
This is Heidi, and a candle of joy. It is my... We're having a birthday party tonight, today, for my nephew who turns 3 and my brother who turns 36. It's my youngest brother and his youngest. And our oldest brother is surprising him by flying in from Germany for the weekend. So it's great.
Hi, this is Sue. A candle of joy. Linda conducted her chorus last night in Arizona. This is a talent she's discovered in recent years, and to great applause, and I got an email from a friend this morning telling me how wonderful she was. So just so you know, she's doing just fine down there.
Hi, this is Lois. A candle of concern and healing for Christy Bowden. Some of us received a text message this morning that she's was taken to Waukesha Memorial for a severe infection. Don't really know anything more at the moment, but just wanted to let you all know. So,
hi, this is Al. Candle of joy for some 12 people who are in the midst of Colorado. They hiked in or skied in 4 miles to a little cabin, and so they're there for the week, and my wife Karen is with them. So candle of joy for their embracing of nature. And just a sidebar to that, it's nifty that they're out enjoying the Colorado Rockies, reflecting on some years back when my eldest was a junior. We sent a group of people out to rebuild the hiking trails out there. So a little give and get there. Another candle of joy for the embracers of stamina and pushing their bodies. There's a whole gang out doing the Berkey. And lastly, a candle of hope. There is a new male brewing team.
Hi, this is Helen. You just light a candle of sorrow. And our lady I took care of for the last 6 months, she is at her funeral last Saturday. And I got to know her quite well. Very interesting German lady with very fun humor. Marguerite Helene Hildegendorf.
Good morning. Just a candle of joy for sweet angel Isaac and all who miss him, and especially for his parents, who will always have a special place in their hearts for him, always.
Hi. I'd like to light a candle of joy. I just got home from Europe, where I visited 5 grandchildren. I'm very happy to be here.
Light the candle of joy. I'm happy to be back. My 2 years struggle of my illness was very difficult with my rheumatoid arthritis, and I tackled it with diet change only, and I'm back again. So it took 2 years of diet change to get here.
This is Bud. May we light a candle of hope that many of us will be behind and supportive of the No More campaign, which has been stimulated, illuminated, and hopefully energizing many of us by the students in Florida.
This is Claire. A candle of joy. I was recognized by our regional manager at CDS, where I work, for a continued 3 months of excellent customer service, as well as an increase of 200% in my sales. And it was just really nice to be recognized in that. And also a segue to Bud's concern. I remember when Columbine happened. I was in high school, and I really give these students who are stepping out and saying no more a lot of credit, because I would probably be doing the same thing, scared, but at the same time, hopeful. Thank you.
And we light our last candle. And we light our last candle for those joys and sorrows which we hold deeply, but which have not been named here today.
In the book of Hebrews, it is written, "Let brotherly and sisterly love continue. Do not forget to entertain strangers, for some have thereby entertained angels unawares." And the Buddhist Suringama Sutra tells us, "If you want to make your mind peaceful and restore its purity, you must proceed as you would if you were purifying a jar of muddy water. You let it sit there until the sediment settles at the bottom. Then the water will become clear. When the mind becomes peaceful and concentrated into perfect unity, then all things will be seen not in their separateness, but in their unity." Spirit of life, we take a few moments to sit still and let the sediment of our minds float to the bottom. Help us clear our minds of biases and distractions so that we may see not the separateness around us, but the unity. And then the joys of one will be the joys of another, and the sorrows we bear by being born together will be borne more lightly. And we will see that we are indeed surrounded by angels if we have eyes to see and ears to hear and hearts to understand. Blessed be. Amen.
The school shooting in Parkland, Florida has left us shaken, horrified, and grieving yet again. We could have a moment of silence filled with thoughts and prayers, but there has been far too much silence about gun violence. So instead, let's sing this hymn, "If We Just Talk of Thoughts and Prayers." The melody is familiar, and the new words by Carolyn Winfrey Gillette, a writer of Christian hymns and co-pastor of Overbrook Presbyterian Church. The hymn was sent out by UU Worship Web. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing, "If We Just Talk of Thoughts and Prayers." The hymn is in the insert of your order of service.
If we just talk.
not long ago, I came upon an article written by someone. I'd come upon it years ago, but I happened to come upon it again, and the message struck me. It was written by someone who had nearly died in a hospital, but through the help of friends who came and visited regularly, she came through it. And here's what she said. This is the reading for this morning. I tell you that I would have died but for the friendships. The doctors had just about given up. Forget it for having any will to live. I can't begin to describe the despair. Beyond the relentless physical pain, there was this utter emptiness of heart and soul. Each morning felt like waking up in hell. Can you understand that? Every morning feeling that way like it was the first time. And yet people came and called and cared and stayed. And each gesture came to feel almost miraculous to me. And there were moments when I would say, you just don't know what this means to me. And they didn't. They couldn't or wouldn't. Isn't that wild? They really didn't see it. They really didn't recognize just how much their ordinary expressions of love would do for me. On the one hand, I thought it was wonderful that they wouldn't make a big deal out of something that seemed so simple for them, just showing up. But on the other hand, I wanted to shake them and say, do you know how beautiful you are? Won't you see? As if they were angels who had forgotten. After reading this, I couldn't get the idea out of my mind. Not just the fact that ordinary people sometimes do wonderful things without realizing it, but that, as this woman puts it, it's as if they were angels who had forgotten. What an interesting concept, that human beings are actually angels who don't realize it. It's similar to the Hindu teaching that we are all divine at heart. We are God unfolding itself into the world, or as the Hindu reading we had, we're walking over gold every day, we just don't know it. Or the Buddhist concept that we are all bodhisattvas, we're all Buddhas to be, we're beings on the road to enlightenment, only we live in ignorance of our true nature. And if all that sounds a little too mystical or esoteric, don't worry, I'm not going to talk about theologies and creedal formulations. It's actually something a lot more ordinary than that. And at the same time, it may be more profound. It's the idea that there is something precious in us and in those around us that ordinary words don't always seem to be able to express. So we search for words like miraculous or magical or overwhelmingly beautiful. And what makes this experience especially fascinating to me is that it is often very ordinary. I mean, the people who visited this woman, who held her hand, gave her a hug, talked to her, listened to her, they were doing what probably seemed to them to be very minor things. Nice, but ordinary acts of no particular significance. And yet to the person who needed what they had to give, needed it in a way beyond asking, it was nothing less than a miracle. Now, I have always believed in this theoretically. After all, it's what we say in our UU principles. We affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person, which is, I notice, is written on the side here. When you come in, you can see all the principles out there. And that's just another way of saying everyone has a light inside. Everyone is precious. But this woman who described her hospital encounters with angels actually experienced this thing that we talk about in theology and poetry without always realizing at a gut level what it is. And before I go into a few other examples about what, let me just say something about the word angel. And we think of an angel, and this is my low-tech stuff, all right, visual aids. We think of an angel as a supernatural being, but actually the word comes from the Greek, angelos, which means messenger. That's what it meant. Now, it eventually came to mean God's messengers, but originally it was just any kind of messenger. If you take And the word for message itself was evangelion, or evangelion. And if you put the Greek word for you in front, you, E-U or E-V, means good, like euphemism, lots of words that have that start with E-U. If you put that together, you get evangelion, good news. So if you ever heard evangelicals, actually it means, in the gospel, the word for gospel was evangelion, good news. In English, we actually have a remnant of this. When they tried to translate this into English, the early forms of English with God was, the word for good was gut, and for message was spiel. So good spiel, a good message, or Godspell, was shortened then to gospel. I mention those things as I just have been told that you're also very picky about words and want to, you care about all the theological concepts, etc. But anyway, maybe not. All right. Anyway, here are a few examples I've picked somewhat at random from files that I keep on interesting but mundane experiences. And what they all have in common is that they're all about surprising messengers of the holy. The first one is from the Reverend Elizabeth Tarbox, a UU minister from Middleborough, Massachusetts, who described a very simple experience she had. And it was an experience that put her in touch with something much bigger than she thought she would. She wrote, "Out walking one morning, I saw a medium-sized turtle begin the dangerous journey across Route 58 from one side of Monpasset Pond to the other. The traffic is pretty heavy, even at 6 a.m. As the turtle left the safety of the grasses at the roadside, I looked right and could see a line of cars coming, led by a Harley Davidson, ridden by a leather-clad figure in a Darth Vader helmet. Now, the turtle was almost at the halfway point, destined for extinction beneath those burning wheels. I moved a few paces into the road and simply pointed to the turtle. The motorcyclist slowed. The rider brought his gleaming bike to a stop, and he put out his arms to indicate to the cars behind him that they should not overtake. And he allowed the turtle to cross in safety. And then he and I signaled a greeting to each other and went on our ways. The turtle, the motorcyclist, and I were on different journeys that day, and mine was a journey of discovery. I discovered that compassion sometimes wears a motorcycle helmet. I went to a place inside me that fears bikers, and I made a few corrections. I don't know what kind of day the turtle had, or the person on the Harley, but my day was better for having encountered them." I like this story because, well, the turtle probably didn't know anything special had happened. The motorcyclist might not have even thought anything special happened either. He may have just thought, "Oh, I'm glad that lady pointed out the turtle. I wouldn't want to run over it," and thought nothing more of it. The drivers behind the motorcyclist may not have thought anything special happened either. They may not have even seen the turtle and just thought there was some problem ahead. We don't know what any of the other people thought. They may have felt awe at the saving of a turtle's life, or they may have gone through with no particular feeling. All we know is that this minister felt something. She saw something she didn't expect. She came away a little changed. She learned that angels sometimes wear motorcycle helmets. And here's another one I found, again, from my file for interesting but mundane experiences. It was a letter to an advice columnist. It's from 1995. You can tell it's old because it was written to Ann Landers. Any of you old enough to have ever read Ann Landers? Okay, some of you are. All right. Anyway. "Dear Ann Landers, I want to thank an anonymous couple that I met briefly at the Indianapolis airport during a trip to Kokomo last March. I had flown to Indiana for a job interview and was wearing very casual clothing. When I arrived, my garment bag with my two best suits, dress shirts, shoes, and toiletries did not. Lost luggage is stressful enough. Expensive clothing and a job interview early the next morning is terrifying. The airline personnel were quite indifferent. I was frantic. A well-dressed couple I had never met overheard the conversation. The gentleman asked me what size suit I wore and offered to loan me his. His suit was one size larger than mine, but it was better than what I was wearing. I was speechless. Just as I was leaving the airport, a representative of the airline ran after me to announce that my luggage had been found. And this incredibly kind couple should know that their offer lifted my morale immeasurably. By the way, I got the job. What I like about this story is that, again, I'll bet the man who offered to loan his suit did not think he was making a supreme sacrifice. He probably thought it was common decency. And the thing is, he didn't even end up loaning his suit because the airlines found the garment bag in time. But it didn't matter. The fact that he was willing to loan it was what made the difference. The other day, as I was shopping, I like to go to thrift stores and things, and Craig was going to be gone. I thought, I'll do the things I like to do that I know he hates. And anyway, one of them was the dollar store, and the woman in front of me was buying several things, and she said, oh, I don't have enough money. You better put this one back. And I said, I'll pay for it. And it was, you know, it was just like $3 or something. And she said, oh, no, that's okay. And I said, no, you can just pay it forward, then do it for someone else. Well, she said, thank you. And then she noticed she did have extra dollars. So I didn't get to give her the money. But again, it didn't matter. We both felt kind of nice that there's someone out there, a stranger, that might actually be kind. You know, many of us have had experiences where someone did something dramatic, something extraordinary, like saving a life or making a great sacrifice or giving an extremely generous donation to an important cause. Or perhaps we've been the one doing the dramatic thing. In cases like that, words like hero, savior, humanitarian, courageous come readily to mind. But an angel who has forgotten is someone who has done something significant without knowing it, which means it must have seemed like a very ordinary thing, no big deal, except to the person who witnessed it. I suspect most of us have had an experience like this. I know I have. In the early days of my ministry in Racine, so this would be 42 and a half years ago, I believe it may have been in the fall, actually, of 1978, our church board had a retreat, and a number of board members told me some things that I really wasn't ready for, things I found very painful to hear. But as they were speaking, someone behind me, another member of the board, gently put her hand on my shoulder. Didn't say anything, didn't squeeze it, just laid her hand there as if to say, I know this is hard, but there's love here. You'll be okay. I don't think she knew what it meant to me at the time. She probably didn't even think about it beforehand. It just came out of her like a light bird that comes to rest on your shoulder for a moment. And then a couple of days later, I got a card from another member of the board who just said, keep on trucking. You know, just meant, these little things meant a lot. Another experience like this that I remember is a conversation I had with a group of Unitarian Universalist ministers and their spouses. This was about 25 years ago. We were introducing ourselves, and one woman referred to her husband as her partner. Now, my first thought was, oh, they must not be married. She would have called him her husband, so they must be just living together. But it turned out they were married. She referred to her husband as her partner because she was aware that gay people didn't get to refer to their partners as husbands or wives, at least legally. And she wanted to, at that time, and that was true, and she wanted to even the playing field a bit. It was as if she was saying, my relationship, though maybe society recognizes it as legal, is no important than yours. So I will refer to my husband with the same language you use until we can all use it. Such a small thing, but so powerfully affirming. And a little later that day, I said something to the effect that I was always so grateful to be at UU gatherings where my relationship was considered as valid as anyone's. This is one of the things Craig and I have enjoyed about going to UUA General Assembly, and they would have a dance, and we could dance. The only place we could do that anywhere else would be at a gay bar, and which we didn't go to anymore. Anyway, so I mentioned to this group of UU ministers, I was so grateful that my to be at a gathering where my relationship was considered as valid as anyone's. And this same woman said something else that I'll never forget. She said, "You shouldn't have to be grateful. It's what everyone deserves." And I thought, you're right. I shouldn't have to be grateful, but I am. And I'm even more grateful for the fact that you realize I shouldn't have to be. You sometimes have no idea what it means to have you think it's no big deal. That in itself is a big deal. You act as if it is not a great blessing you have given, but that's part of what makes it a great blessing. Now, this next experience or story is a kind of life and death story, but again, the angel here probably didn't know he was one. In 1944, during World War II in France, there was a deportation train carrying members of the French Resistance to a concentration camp. A few passengers were able to jump off and survive, even though it was moving very fast. One of them was badly hurt, but a farmer found him and took him to his farm where he let him stay until the end of the war. Now, this was a very dangerous thing for the farmer to do, especially since this particular resistance fighter was Jewish, and the farmer and his family could be sent away or even be killed themselves for harboring a refugee. But he and his family did it anyway. Many years later, the man that they had saved became a social worker and did a lot of work with children. And since he remained a very religious Jew, some children asked him once about a question they had. They said, "What is an angel? We don't understand what an angel is because we've never seen one." And this man, thinking of the farmer who saved his life, said, "An angel is someone who, just when you think all is lost, when you think no one will ever help you, that nothing is possible, all of a sudden, an angel is there to help." I'd like you to take a few moments to think about some of your own experiences where something that seemed ordinary maybe had an extraordinary effect on you. And maybe we can pass the microphones around, and this will be a little... We decided we would do a polylog if there was enough time. It looks like that there is. So if you have something you'd like to share, just raise your hand, and the ushers, I think, can get the mic to you. Then I'll have some concluding thoughts.
Baden is an angel to me.
Hi, my name is Judy. I can't tell you a story about a human angel, but I have to tell you that I have a guardian angel named Rachel. And the fact that you are preaching about angels today is just absolutely breathtaking for me. My angel accompanies me everywhere I go. If my foot gets heavy on my pedal, it will lighten up as soon as a cop shows up. Just a little bit. I have never been drenched in the rain. It might drizzle on me, but it never drenches me. Rachel always protects me. And even my grandkids know this. They'll say, "Oh, we don't need an umbrella, Papa. Grandma's going with us. It's not going to rain on us." But I just wanted to say thank you. It was wonderful to hear the angel stories and to let you know that even if they're not physically sitting next to you, they are there all the time.
This is Rick again, and some people in my life have taught me a bunch of things, I guess, and those of you that know me know that I'm usually pretty goofy and I smile a lot. But I used to think that When I'd walk through a store, all these people would smile at me. There must be a clown behind me that's making them all smile. And then some days, the clown doesn't show up. But then I get a smile back from somebody else, and then I smile. It seems to work.
This is Eric. Last week at Saga, we talked about the three most important words in the English language. I see you. So I'm listening to this story about angels. So one of the things that's resonating for me is that I get seen. If an angel lands or shows up in some fashion or another, it's because they see me. I feel noticed. I feel validated. I feel heard. It's impossible to overemphasize the value of being seen and recognized. It happened for me the first time that was really a significant shift decades ago at a Unitarian church in Lincoln, Nebraska, and they had a new member orientation. And I was one of the people that showed up, but the person giving that orientation, there was something about him, and I still don't know what it was, and after the orientation, he looked me in the eyes, and he just said, I am so glad you're here. And I was seen in a way I had never been seen before. And I'll never forget that 5 seconds when he looked me in the eyes in that way.
Hi there, this is Sarah. So I have a cartoon, a Mutz cartoon, that I actually laminated and put by my desk at work. And it says, not everyone will do great things, but everyone can do small things with great love. And that's what you're talking about. It's those little things that are done with love that make the biggest difference.
This is Claire. About 5 years ago last month, all of you know me as an animal lover. I had to put my horse down, and I'd had him for about 22 years. He was 31 years old, and the day after he died, I was caretaking at a farm, and I had to do chores that morning, feed all the animals, clean stalls, and I woke up, even though I was very hurt and very sad. I woke up, I did chores, and I just kind of did it with the purpose of just get it done. You can go back inside and cry a little bit more. And when I started cleaning stalls, it hit me, and I felt it coming. I put the pitchfork down, I sat on a bale of hay, and I just lost it. And here comes the farm dog. Here comes the barn cats. They just surrounded me. I was sitting on that bale of straw, and they were right there. And sometimes angels are four-legged as well as two-legged.
This is Meredith. I grew up in Southern Africa, and when I was probably 4 or 5 years old, we were living in what is now called Zimbabwe, and going to the coast was a big deal with us. We often went in various places, and from there we went to to Mozambique, and was on the beach, and we went into the water, and I was with my brother, who was probably a year older, and suddenly, big backwash, and I just got dragged out. And suddenly, out of nowhere, a hand grabbed me and hoisted me up and probably gave me to my parents. I just remember a hand coming out of nowhere, and but for that, I would have been a goner.
Hi, I'm Mary. Well,
a very, very special woman came into my life in Germany. I was 19, and we had just, well, relatively newly arrived in Germany, so my German was non-existent. We were in the hospital. We just lost our baby. I was 8 months pregnant, and we were crushed. And, of course, you're in the operating room, and here was this nurse who, she knew I couldn't speak German, and she couldn't speak English, but all she did was just put her arms around me and just hug me. I will never forget that. It was a real gift.
Hi, this is Joanne, and I love this idea of the everyday miracles, that just the little things that happen in the day that you didn't hit the biker going past, or, you know, someone is kind to you, and I think of those as miracles often. But I was going to share about a time 25 years ago when I moved into my house, and I was a little bit pregnant and so exhausted thinking I can't put stuff away, and my sister-in-law, who I wasn't even that close to, came over and suddenly and started unpacking my whole kitchen. And I remember it with such clarity to this day. And she, too, is like, looks at me really weird, even if I bring it up, because, like, what does she care? But it meant so much to me. But anyway, as I was listening, I was looking at Robin and had this big memory of my young family attended our very first church service however many years ago. And Robin and Edith were sitting in front of us, and we were like, what is this weird church? Let's give it a try. And they turned around and talked to us and asked us questions. And they're probably a big reason why we remain here. So, thank you, Robin.
My experience is something that I think many moms can relate to. Having four kids in 4 years, and my second one being 15 months when our twins were born, and there's this shift after you have babies where this focus is on the babies and not on the mom. It was a very lonely and sad time, and I think there, I'm hesitant to use the word angels, but just in my from my own history, but any kind of outpouring that I did receive was so meaningful and so touching that it was just that, it meant so much. It could have been anything. I remember I was in nursing school too. I don't know why, but I don't know. But you know, people who just brought a package of diapers or came over and did the dishes, it was just anything at that time meant so much. And it was just a reminder for me and, you know, in my future life now.
I hope that some of you might continue that conversation in the car or whatever later in the day. But for now, I just want to say something about why it might be worthwhile to see other people as angels who have forgotten and yourself as an angel who has finally remembered. It's not so much a literal truth as a spiritual truth. You do not always realize that you sometimes have the most profound effect on people you'd never guess unless they tell you. Someone sent me an email about this and said it was sort of like each of us is a puzzle. We come to Earth as we're born as a puzzle and wrapped up, but we have some pieces in somebody else's puzzle, and it's all kind of mixed up. And so sometimes when you interact with someone and they have the piece that you need, and it doesn't seem important to them, but it turns out to be important to you. And I just thought that was another great metaphor for thinking about this. But anyway, you and I, generally, I think we don't see how our ordinary actions, the things we do without even thinking about it, might manifest a vision of human goodness that gives hope to people you may never suspect, or for that matter, never even know. And remember, too, if it's true that the best angels often don't know they're angels, and what they do may seem quite ordinary to the casual observer, and it's only the person who's watching carefully who sees their true nature, if that's true, there may be angels around you right now who appear to be doing very ordinary things, but who, if you look carefully enough, may be hiding a halo. There's a book in the New Testament, Paul's letter to the Hebrews, that you heard before the sermon, that says, "Do not forget to entertain strangers, for some have thereby entertained angels unawares." Paul was probably referring to Abraham and Sarah, who had three strangers in ragged clothes come to their door asking for shelter from the cold. And Abraham invited them to sit near the fire, and Sarah took the food she had been preparing for herself and Abraham and divided it into five portions so that they all would be able to eat. And that's when the three strangers revealed themselves as angels, as God's messengers. And I think what scripture passages like this are trying to tell us is the divine is present in ordinary people, sometimes in even unpleasant-seeming people. God, or the holy, or that which is most precious, depending on the words you're comfortable with, is often made manifest in people and places where we never expect to find it, in strangers whom we may meet only once and then they're gone, but who touch us somehow, who reveal something by their manner, like the eyes that looked at you and made you felt seen. By their manner, by their actions, by their words, they reveal something that hints of a more beautiful world than we are used to seeing. And we in turn may, without always recognizing it, hint of a more beautiful world to someone else. We don't need to know every time it happens to know that it does happen. And thus may we always be angels who may have forgotten, but occasionally remember.
The chalice is extinguished, but its light lives on in the minds and hearts and on the shoulders of each one of us. Let us carry the flame with us and share it with those we know and those we love, and most especially with those we have yet to meet. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our closing hymn this week, number 131, in the great hymnal, "Love Will Guide Us."
Peace has dried us, hope inside us.
the Jewish Talmud it is written, when a person walks on the highway, a company of angels goes before them, proclaiming, make way for the image of the Holy One. You are the image of the Holy One, and whether there are angels going before you to proclaim that, and whether anyone else even notices it, live as the Holy One you are, and flap your wings and let your spirit fly. Amen.